your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I hope everybody enjoyed those first two segments with Jesse Felder. I am now chatting with Adrian Day, president of Adrian Day Asset Management, also manages the Euro-Pacific Gold Fund. Adrian and I are going to focus more exclusively on the commodities sector and really divide it into two different broad sectors here. Let's start off with precious metals, especially gold. One thing we've noticed throughout this week, especially here, Adrian, is just a broad recovery in now the smaller stocks, gold juniors. We saw the gold majors and the royalty companies really leading the turnaround in gold about 2 months ago, and some of the select juniors were doing well, but just in this week, especially at the beginning of the week, one thing I noticed was a lot of upward movement in juniors across the board in the gold sector. What do you think's driving this? Why all of a sudden are the juniors starting to broadly move higher?
Well, hello, Corey, and thank you for having me again. I was going to say you must have a different list of stocks on your portfolio list than I do, because a lot of the juniors, I mean, certainly more of the juniors are moving, but I still think it's a long way from a broad-based recovery. There's still a lot of them that really haven't picked up at all, but certainly, I mean, certainly in broad terms, we can say that the big royalties, the major miners, they bottomed at the end of February, retested some of them at the end of March, but they've been moving up now, as you said, for the last few months, and selectively, the juniors and explorations were moving, and it's just been a gradual process, I think, to some extent. You know, each week, each month, you know, more of the juniors will pop or will move until, you know, as you said, in the last month, it's been much broader, although by no means universal. I think that's important to mention. I mean, I could name, you know, a whole list of good quality exploration companies that are at the same or even lower prices than they were a month ago. But I think that's when you ask what's happening, I think it's just really more of the same general pattern. Two things. First of all, the seniors always move first. We know that. Let's say 9 times out of 10, they move first, and then the second tiers, and then it slowly moves down to the juniors and exploration companies. So that's just part of a general pattern. And I think you normally get more of the juniors and exploration companies moving, other than on specific events. You get those moving when the gold market appears to have confirmed its move. You know, you don't get that on the initial move, but you get it when they've confirmed the move. And I think the way gold has acted in the last couple of months, you know, moving up with very little in the way of pullback, and now, you know, well, not only well above 1800, but now, you know, approaching 1900, then I think, you know, that starts, people wanting to buy. I think it's just a matter that gold has confirmed its move, and people are now willing to move down to the juniors.
Now, Adrian, can you pinpoint any maybe certain news event or data point that you think really signified the turn? Or was it simply that gold finally had the correction that it needed? It lasted a little bit longer than some people thought, and it was due for a bounce, and now we're in the early stages of that bounce.
I think it's primarily the latter, to be honest. And we talked about this last time, how after the big run-up, at the beginning of last year, ending at the beginning of August, you know, from end of March to the beginning of August, gold moved up over 40% in US dollar terms. Huge move for an asset like gold. So you had a correction that frankly just lasted a long time. When you think about it, it really wasn't such a deep correction. It was just that it dragged on for so long, which ironically was a sign of strength, meaning there were always people standing there ready to buy. But I think it was just a matter of seller exhaustion, frankly. And that's what often happens with markets. People are always looking. I mean, if you looked on, you know, what was it, March the 1st or whatever it was, the gold, March the 8th, but gold bottomed. I don't think there was any particular development that day. I think you just get a matter of seller exhaustion, and that's often what happens in markets. But of course, and you get the opposite, which is buyer exhaustion. You run out of buyers on the upside, and a stock or market just has to roll over because there's no more people willing to pay the price. But those events always happen against a background of either strong fundamentals or improving fundamentals, and that's what we saw with gold. I mean, the excess money printing that the Fed's doing was really, which they've been doing for the last year now, but they've actually increased what we'll call money printing. The money supply has picked up in the last 3 months. Fed credit, the rate of growth in Fed credit has increased in the last 3 months. Whereas one would have thought, and the Fed expected, and analysts expected, but after that initial run last year, you would get you'd get a plateauing and perhaps a slow retracement as the economy starts to improve. On the contrary. And the huge spending measures that the current administration has either passed or is in Congress or is planning has 10 to $12 trillion of new spending in the last 2 months has been, you know, proposed. And the Fed has indicated a willingness to accommodate that. That only reinforces, the fundamental positive for gold, which is that the Fed is creating excess credit. And when you hear these news reports about, oh, Fed mentions tapering, let's not forget that it was just a handful of the Fed board members. It was not the board unanimous decision. It was a handful that brought it up. And the Fed agreed to lay out a timeline when they would start to begin to discuss tapering. We're a long way from tapering, and they're not even talking about tapering, but they're laying out a groundwork for when they might begin to talk about it. My gosh, they're really reluctant. They are going to be the most reluctant Federal Reserve ever to tighten money. So those things are very positive. And of course, then we had the inflation numbers. We can talk about that if you want.
One quick comment on that Fed minutes, right? It was a pretty funny comment from them because it said a number of participants suggested that if the economy continued to make rapid progress towards the committee's goals, it might be appropriate at some time in upcoming meetings to begin discussing a plan for adjusting these asset purchases. So you're right, Adrian. It's a crazy kind of waffly comment.
You said it better than I did. But yeah, they couldn't have thrown in any more words to downplay it more.
No, they really couldn't. Now, one other aspect that I want to talk about here, and we will get into inflation, but on the other side of the commodity spectrum, we are seeing just a little bit of weakness, not even really a correction right now, I don't think, but you see base metals and even energy, they pulled back a little bit from some of their highs. Now, one thing to consider is that some of these highs vastly exceeded all-time highs for especially something, for some of these other base metals. And now they're showing a little bit of weakness. It's kind of this rotation out of base metals into precious metals. What's your takeaway from that environment, the little bit of weakness that's come into these other commodity sectors?
Yeah, you're right. The last week or two, and particularly yesterday, we saw quite a bit of weakness in many of them, and not just commodities, but obviously therefore the commodity stocks as well. I think you've hit the nail on the head. Number one, we have gone too far on the upside, so a little bit of a pullback is more than normal. Secondly, again, you've hit the nail on the head. It's we can't even begin to call it a correction yet. Maybe we'll lay out a timeline following the Fed when we might begin to discuss whether it's a correction. But, these are pretty mild pullbacks at the moment. Now, in individual stocks, you can look and say, ouch. Chevron as an example, big oil company. You know, you could say Chevron was over 111 3 days ago and it's 103 now. Well, you know, ouch. But it's been down there multiple times in the last few weeks, last several weeks. So again, I think we shouldn't exaggerate the moves at the moment. But clearly what happened was the commodities, many of them, had moved too far too soon. And the fundamental news, I don't know if you've seen reports, but the People's Bank of China is discussing with the Fed ways to clamp down on commodity prices, which is really ironic when you think, particularly on the Federal Reserve side, is very ironic when you think, but the Fed, isn't this just what the Fed's been asking for? The Fed's been asking for higher prices. They've said we need more inflation, and they've been asking for, you can't have more inflation without commodity prices going up. So it's really perverse for them suddenly to think, oh, well, maybe we should clamp down on commodity prices. I think the reports are real, but I don't think anything's going to come of it. The Fed there's very little the Fed can do to clamp down on commodity prices. They don't own a whole bunch of commodities, so they can't sell. The only way to clamp down on high commodity prices for the Fed would be to tighten the money supply. And they're not going to do that anytime soon. So I suspect that what you'll see from this weakening and from these reports of China and the U.S. trying to clamp down on commodity prices, what you'll see is you'll see some softening at the margin for a short period of time. You know, people who've been hoarding, because there's a lot of hoarding, let's not forget there's hoarding and there's high inventories in some of these commodities, you'll get those people backing off new buying, perhaps even selling. People who are looking to buy will just hold off a little bit if they can do so. But I don't think this is a long-lasting. I don't think this is a long-lasting thing at all. Will they be able to suppress real economic demand for commodities? Absolutely no. And there's no reason they should, frankly.
So, Adrian, just a quick comment then regarding inflation before we wrap this up. Look, the inflation data last week vastly exceeded expectations. On the upside, everyone's still saying, is it transitory? Will it last? We don't know, and we won't know until, well, time tells. But what do you think about that inflation data that came in on the upside and just how big of a driver that could continue to be for commodities broadly?
Yeah, I mean, clearly the Fed and its various apologists in the media and in Congress, I mean, clearly there are a couple of factors that you could say make it perhaps suggest it might be transitory. I mean, clearly we were coming off a very, very depressed April of last year. So there's what's called the base effect, and we see that all the time, right? We see that with corporate earnings reports. Oh, we had a great quarter. It wasn't such a great quarter. It was just such a lousy quarter last year, right? So the base effect is a real thing. But, you know, let's not make too much of a base effect. Everyone's saying April last year, the beginning of the lockdown, it was such a low number. Well, look at the actual level of the consumer price index and the producer price index for April this year and compare it with February last year or January last year or December the year before. We're still way up over 4% from those 3 months to this January. So it is simply not true. The base effect is real, but it's simply not true to say that April's weak numbers a year ago account for all we're seeing today. And the second thing, obviously, is that if you look at the absolute levels, we've had increasing consumer prices for several months now. this isn't just a matter that, oh, this is high compared with a year ago, or, oh, you know, we can now take our masks off and everyone's spending money again. This has been increasing now for months. So although April might be a particularly high month, I don't think, you know, numbers over 2% are transitory by any means. And one last thing, if I may, you know, let's not forget gas. You know, we had the pipeline hacking. And in the media, they've been talking about high gas prices and the hack, the pipeline hack, in you know, in the same sentence. Let's not forget that the April numbers were before the hack. They were before the hack. So gasoline prices already moving up, nationwide average over $3 a gallon, already moving up before the hack. Let's not forget also that the higher wages that we've seen, you know, everyone's talking about the worker shortage. You know, we talked about that two weeks ago. That's a real thing. So now companies are paying more for, low-level workers. Restaurant I go to says that they're paying their dishwasher $18,000 a year, which is actually the average income in Puerto Rico is $18,000. So a dishwasher is now getting paid the average wage in Puerto Rico because they can't find people. Now, the point I'm going to make is typically, first of all, these numbers from April do not reflect higher wages yet. Those higher wages have not yet worked their way into higher consumer goods. So they don't reflect that either. Secondly, wage increases tend not to be transitory. You do not say to somebody, well, I know I gave you a raise two weeks ago, but now we're going to cut it this week. You don't do that. You can't do that. So wage increases are not transitory. So no, I don't think this is transitory at all.
Okay. Adrian, I appreciate your thoughts on these markets, especially, well, resource focused here. And there has been a bit of a change just in the last really week, but then also about a month and a half ago as well, a change in direction for the precious metals. So now the question is just how far, how long can it run for? Adrian, great chatting with you. Thank you for sharing some of your thoughts on this weekend show. I look forward to chatting with you in another couple weeks. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
And you, thank you so much for having me, Kai.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment.